If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Captain! Captain!
Report.
Signatures detected!
Shields up!
Signatures detected!
Red alert!
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair! Chair!
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons? Klingons? Those are Klingons.
Welcome to the Greatest Discovery. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Back at you with another book club episode of The Greatest Discovery. This time it's a comic book.
Yeah. Comic book done by our friend Felipe. Well, he did the colors, right? Our friend Felipe Sobreiro, who I don't know if we'll have our acts together, but we're getting ready to launch some new merch. And he did the design for a couple of things that will be available to the friends of DeSoto soon. But if you've ever seen our game of buttholes, the Will of the Caretaker that we use to randomize episodes on The Greatest Generation, he did all the little character design on that. And he's like a super talented comics artist. And he told us when he sent this to us that if he'd done the inking, if he'd like actually designed the book, we would for sure have been blown out of an airlock.
That's so sweet of him to say.
I know.
He does such great work. Like, you got to go to his website because it's full of really fun, interesting combinations of things that I think friends of DeSoto would really like. He sent me that that Stallone mask that I'm not allowed to wear. he just does a great job. So we're both big fans of his work.
Yeah, indeed. He also did the Captain DeSoto illustration that was on the challenge coin that we took out on tour as a tour merch item a couple of years ago.
I've had one on my desk forever.
Yeah.
I'm going to show the viewers the best boss I ever had coin.
Yeah.
Hey, we might have a bunch of these coins left over to put up to that store you were referring to. So
yeah, we need to get
on the lookout for that.
Get our heads around what inventory we have, because a lot of it is like sitting in boxes in our closets right now, and that's no good. That does nobody any good.
Look out for that. We're professionalizing in a number of ways, and the store is a big part of that effort for us. So know that that is on the way.
Yeah. How you doing today, buddy?
I wasn't sure if I was going to talk much about this on the show, but now that I've started describing it that way, I guess I can. Sprocket's sick, man, and he's been sick for a long time. And we were at the vet again today, and just to keep it very brief, because I don't know if I can talk about it without soon not being able to talk about it. But back in September, we got some really bad and surprising news about him. Every day since then has been both the best and the worst day. We've been really fortunate to have some great vets involved, and we are doing everything we can to bullet point number one, keep him comfortable and happy, and bullet point number two, try to do what we can to mitigate the damage. I only mention it because we just had a vet appointment this morning, and so it's it's more front of mind than it usually is, and it is usually on my mind.
It's been tough, man, because you've had a few times where we had something scheduled work-wise or whatever, and it all has to be set aside when your pup is sick. And
yeah,
I know how worried you've been, and it's hard to do that that worrying and then change gears really fast and hop on mics and joke around for an hour. I've been really feeling for you because I know that that's a tough thing to do, but I also know that sometimes it's really nice to have an excuse to escape from those bad feelings and enjoy yourself for a little while.
You're really right, man. I know there have been a number of things that both you and I have gone through that aren't public. Like, kind of a lot of personal shit has happened in our lives over the last 6 months to a year. And
yeah,
you are spot on with how difficult it is to switch the mental gears into having fun with my friend, but you're spot on-er when you say how necessary it is. You know, I can't live with the dread and the grief of all of these things every hour of every day. Like, the shows that we do mean a lot to me because they're an opportunity to get myself out of that mental rut, to have some really necessary laughs. And yeah, I always feel better after doing a show. So I'm really grateful that we have it and that it's a regular thing.
Me too, man.
That's useful.
I think that we have both gone through the thing of feeling like, oh God, I don't know if I can get it up to record today. Mm-hmm. Like, especially in the last 3 months, I think we've both had days like that where we came pretty reluctantly to the mic. And the thing that I value so much about our friendship is that falls away the instant we start talking, and we can really find our way to making each other laugh pretty quickly, pretty reliably.
Yeah, it really helps. Like, we're really down in it at this point.
Yeah.
And it's super tough, but the show remains a reliable help in a lot of ways, and I'm glad we've got it. And we hear from a lot of people how it benefits them in similar ways. So it's kind of amazing to do a thing that has that kind of value to not just ourselves.
Yeah.
It's not all about us. It's mostly about us when we make this show. But I'm glad it does some greater good too.
Yeah. Well, do you want to get into this comic book we came to read today, buddy?
Yeah, let's turn the page to something else as we continue our comic book series on The Greatest Discovery. This 4-issue series came out in 2020, but you and I were gifted the anthology.
Yeah. Issues 1 through 4 in a paperback.
It's about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. It's called Murder on the Edge, Too Long a Sacrifice.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
The writers are familiar to anyone who have enjoyed the Mirror Universe series of IDW comics. The Tiptons, Scott and David, were involved with the concept and the writing of this series. So familiar players.
Yeah.
In the world of these comics.
Indeed. So we open on a crowded Deep Space Nine promenade. Bashir is kind of glowering, looking around. And he bumps into Garrick. They've got a lunch date. And they go into a Bajoran restaurant. What's this lady's name? Lavin?
That's the thing about comics, man.
Yeah.
We need Petkoff to read this comic to us.
Well, I think in Star Trek, the convention is that whoever says the name first gets to decide on how it's pronounced. So,
well, we know that's not true from Star Trek Voyager, because if it were, he'd be known as Chakotay.
Yeah, I like Lavin. I'm prepared to go with that. She is the proprietress. She kind of like busts Garrick's chops for not coming around that often. I guess he and Bashir mostly hang in the Replimat, but they're classing it up today, eating in a nicer type of restaurant. And
Lavin's got a rep as kind of a ball buster. You can tell right away.
Yeah. She's your kind of lady, I think.
Oh, you think so?
She's an Ensign Row type restaurateur.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. So Bashir and Garrick sit down to this meal and they talk but don't talk about how the war is going. They're kind of sniffing each other's asses for information, but neither of them is willing to spill any of those ass beans.
I kind of found myself wondering precisely where in the Deep Space Nine timeline this story is meant to take place. And it's a little hard to tell initially, but we do get some clues kind of peppered in along the way. And one of them being the uniforms they're wearing are the post first contact uniforms, and another being that the Dominion War is on. So this is pretty late in the series. And Garrick and Bashir are kind of dancing around the topic of is the war going as well for the Federation as is generally known, or much worse, would you say?
Right. And, you know, when there's like that war elephant in the room that you can't really discuss, it doesn't leave much else for them to talk about. Like the Garrick-Bashir relationship, we've been dosed a bunch of it throughout the series of Deep Space Nine. But when I really stop to think about all of those scenes and think about what they were really talking about, I mean, I would say it was fairly superficial.
Yeah.
In terms of their relationship, you know?
There's always a supercharged subtext when Garrick and Bashir are talking, no matter what they're talking about. They could talk about nothing and charge it up like that.
It's about nothing. Right.
But is subtext a strong foundation for a friendship or a relationship? This is the question.
Yeah.
I guess it's strong enough to split a check at Lavin's.
Yeah. Well, they don't have much time for subtext because pretty quickly there is like a beep coming from under a nearby table, and Garrick seems to notice this.
Where is it going? It's traveling up my spine, into my brain.
He acts quickly. He seems to kind of like throw himself and Bashir out the window and into the promenade as a high explosive device goes off in Lavin's eatery.
And this is why I don't like those little pagers that restaurants give you to tell you when your table's ready. Because when it goes off, it's so loud and shocking. And you think you know what the vibration's going to feel like. It's so much stronger when it goes off than you think it will be.
These are people that clearly did some product design testing with my wife, and they knew that something that vibrates as much as a phone inside her purse is not going to get her attention.
Right.
So they had to go with a level of vibration that was like pretty significantly more violent than that. but what they went with was C4. and I think that was like a little bit of an overshot.
Yeah. Here's the thing about the panel of the explosion, though, that I want to call attention to, because I'm sure there's like real comic book terminology that a person can use. I'm not going to use it because I'm an idiot. But like the top part, so it's a 2-page spread here when the explosion goes off. And the top half spans across both pages. Really cool, like territorial shot. Yeah. Of the explosion, and the colors are really interesting. But on the bottom, there's a 3-cell triptych of the scene where Garrick quote unquote saves Bashir. And the middle frame is obscured by the page cut in a really unfortunate way, because I couldn't tell if Garrick was saving Bashir in the scene because of where the page cut through. It looked like maybe they were thrown free from the blast instead of Garrick doing a thing that actually saved Bashir here. I thought that was too bad.
It's too bad. I think that part of that is because that this is the bound all four issues book, and if you had a comic book, it would lay a little bit flatter. Or if you had the digital version on like Comixology or whatever, you probably would see this clean. But yeah, that fold happens in an unfortunate place. And also, the last frame of that little triptych looks like dead Superman, you know? Like, Bashir is lying with blood coming out of his mouth. And I was like, fuck, they killed Bashir at the beginning of this comic? Holy shit!
I thought dead Superman, too. It's crazy how iconic that image was from, like, what was it, like 30 years ago? The Death of Superman comic? Like,
not quite 30 years ago, maybe 25, but yeah, that was a big deal.
I want to be diplomatic about this. There are a lot of different versions of Bashir I think we get in this series. Mm-hmm. I think there's something about his face that must present a challenge artistically, because sometimes he looks like Albert Brooks, like in that very first cell, and later on he looks like Russell Crowe. Like, I wonder if this is true or not. I wonder if aliens are easier to draw than humans because of all the loaf. Like, I think the loaf gets you out of art jail a little bit because the details help.
Yeah.
It helps with identification. And while Alexander Siddig is a super good-looking guy, it seems like the qualities that make him good-looking must also make him difficult to draw.
I think Odo is really well captured in this book. Mm-hmm. And all of the other characters, like, there are some cells where it's just like, God, that is like a perfect O'Brien or perfect Dax. But yeah, there are also moments where I was like, is that Potato Jesus? Oh, no, it's Dax.
Yeah.
So Odo is kind of the main character of these first two books that we read, and he is running the investigation, and we get kind of like investigator's notes from time to time on the page. But it's kind of the CSI Deep Space Nine, where he's standing in the wreckage of this explosion with Jadzia Dax and Miles O'Brien, and they are talking about like the nature of the explosion. How did Bashir and Garrick survive this? Do we have any like suspects that leap to mind? Do we know what kind of explosive it was? Like, why? Like, how did somebody get a high explosive device on board the station and into a restaurant? A lot of problems here, and it doesn't look like. One thing I feel like they don't address at all so far in these first two comic books is like, this is kind of a major fuck up of Odo's, you know? This is a bit of a my pet goat situation.
I like to do a lot of outreach work in Keiko O'Brien's classroom. The kids really like it when I do the voices and the actual animals of the books that I read to them.
Of course, some of my deputies have suggested that Quark determined to strike inside competitor restaurant, but I did not deem that to be a credible threat at the time.
Yeah. I love the wide shot, like the cells that are the wide shot of the damage.
Yeah, they're very much evocative of 9/11, I thought. The like kind of angular wreckage leaning in. And also evocative of the Mirror Universe. Like, I definitely thought about Mirror Universe Terok Nor a lot, just with the color scheme. I mean, it's like very film noir style of drawing and color. So that Terok Nor stuff is like for sure evoked by that whenever you see it.
That comparison to a CSI or a Law and Order that you made is really apt, because the way that the story unfolds in a very CSI / Law and Order kind of way. This is Star Trek as a place on Law and Order, because we get that boots on the ground scene of the investigation and Odo's delegating and investigating. And later on, like, we get the autopsy scene with Bashir to come. But like, those are like foundational scenes in every crime show that you get.
The captain and Odo interview Lavin, who also survived the blast, and she is real messed up. She is still on the scene. It doesn't seem like this happens in the infirmary or anything, because she's like crouched in the rubble, but she's got like
piece of gauze that she's pressing against her forehead, and there's like flecks of blood all over her. And she's got some survivor's guilt. Like, she's thinking about the fact that, like, if the blast had gone off seconds earlier, she would have been out in the dining room and would have taken her out. And she is convinced. She has a suspect. She thinks that there's only one person that could have destroyed her life and livelihood in the way that this has gone down. And the frame where she says it was Quark is probably my favorite frame in the comic so far. She is so fucking mad.
I feel the same way. I know this is a consequence of how much Curb Your Enthusiasm I've been watching lately. But Lavin has got Susie Green vibes big time, and mostly because she's screaming about Quark in a way that I so appreciate Susie screaming about Larry. Yeah.
That fat foreheaded fuck! Quark, get the fuck out of here! Go gamble with your idiot friends and play tango, you piece of shit!
Lavin really got up in that ass.
She got in that ass in a way that you know she was there.
Yeah, that's Cell. I mean, that is a big time mood. Mm-hmm. When Lavin goes off on Quark. And really, like, it seems like one of the more difficult expressions to pull off if you're drawing a person.
Yeah.
It's really visceral.
We catch up with Bashir doing autopsies and whatnot in the infirmary.
Why is your Y incision down toward the waist? I thought it usually started up here.
Why is it not shaped like a Y, but like a P?
I've never seen a dead person with a catheter installed.
Is that like a pump siphon? What are you trying to determine about the cause of death here?
Well, I can confirm beyond the shadow of a doubt that a urinary tract infection was not the cause of death here.
Unfortunately, the explosive had these rhodium darts packed around it. Like, whoever built it, like, made sure it had a lot of shrapnel. And rhodium darts are apparently a controlled substance, something that they would have detected under normal circumstances if somebody was trying to bring it aboard a station.
It seems like a method of destruction that's meant to send a message, right? Because, right, like, with a claymore mine or like a pipe bomb or something, like, you're stuffing those things with ball bearings or thumbtacks or something.
Yeah.
But this dart is, like, it takes a lot of work to produce, and it looks specialized in a way that like, it's not supposed to anonymize itself. There's something about this that makes it special.
Yeah, and they look mean, you know? They're like, yeah, pointy, and they're kind of like, kind of evocative of shuriken, like, in the way that they just look like they would, like, tear you the fuck up if one hit you at any kind of speed.
Right. Yeah, you're not just afraid at the time of the explosion, but in that split second of a bunch of shurikens coming at your face.
So we have a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
In Sisko's office with Kira and Dax and Odo and the captain. And they're talking about how goes the investigation, what the suspicions are. And they still, you know, don't really know how these things got on board. O'Brien is looking back through sensor logs and stuff. Odo is canvassing witnesses, trying to get to the bottom of this. Nobody really buys that it's Quark. Like, nobody is like, yeah, Quark would definitely put a bomb in a competitor's restaurant to put them out of business. That just doesn't seem to hold water for these guys. So,
yeah, Quark is a shithead and a nuisance, but he's no murderer.
Yeah.
The scenes in this comic are so dark by choice that it's really nice to get some cells broken up with just white background when you get them.
Yeah.
I like it.
I do too, yeah. It's a nice turning point in the scene because Sisko kind of is collecting the information at the beginning of the scene and then takes the floor and explains why the pressure is on. Like, this is a diplomatic incident in a big way. Like, lots of different types of aliens were killed in the blast, and so there are diplomats representing all of those worlds putting pressure on him, and they are also dealing with the fact that they're at war, and this is like destabilizing the kind of civil society of the station. And if they have an issue like that going on while they're trying to prosecute the Dominion War, it makes it much, much harder.
This is what made Avery Brooks's performance on DS9 so compelling. Like the way you really felt the weight of all of these competing pressures on him. It wasn't just the challenge of fighting a war. It was all that it entailed from not just the stakeholders, but like people in the periphery just trying to make a life for themselves.
Yeah. And I like reading a comic about characters who I've seen performed before, because I really feel like I can imagine how these lines would be delivered. I think that this is really well written from a standpoint of Sisko really sounds like Sisko and O'Brien really sounds like O'Brien to me.
Yeah. Worf really barges his way into this story in a way, because Worf and Odo have an interaction that goes from everything okay to we need to talk in like a half a second. It gets so intense.
Yeah. It's Worf kind of inviting himself to go along for the ride with Odo on the investigation. And that's very reminiscent of the early seasons when Worf was introduced to the show. And there was kind of a conflict between the two characters of just like, who is the security guy on this show? And Odo won out, leaving the job of tactics to Worf, but not of security. And Worf is pretty convinced that they should just, knock it off with the investigations and start acting as if the first person accused was probably the person who did it. And that is a sentiment that is echoed by a couple of Nausicaans who walk in and say, "We think Quark did it. Also, anyone up for Dom Jot?"
It's a scene that reminds me not all Nausicaans, Ben, because I feel like the Nausicaans that we've known up until now have been like monosyllabic, kind of thick dolts.
Yeah.
But these Nausicaans talk like theater actors doing a monologue at Summerstock. Like they are like flowery with their language almost. I mean, they're also growling and screaming.
Yeah.
But sometimes they're talking in a very unfamiliar way.
Yeah. They lost a couple of buddies. Was it brothers of theirs?
Yeah. Yeah. These are their two brothers died. Two of their brothers died in the blast. These are the two that Garrick ran past in order to Cardassian shield Dr. Bashir.
Very understandable that they would be this upset.
They grow in anger to the extent that Odo needs to tell them to talk to the hand.
Yeah.
By unfolding a giant hand to separate them from the rest of the group.
Yeah, and then he turns it into like a giant chicken drumstick and like whacks them with it.
Yeah.
That thing looked like something I would buy at the Popeyes down the street from my house, man.
Odo does a lot of Odo tricks in the comic books that there's no budget for on the show.
Yeah, it's good stuff. But they smash one of his computers and barge out. And I guess that was enough for Odo to go ahead and do exactly what they wanted, because the last page of this first comic is him pulling Quark into his office and pretty much laying the accusation on him.
Yeah, it's a Quark cliffhanger into issue 2.
Because these rhodinium darts were found in a shipment that was headed to Quark. So it's a pretty, I mean, it's circumstantial, but it's pretty damning that he would have a second shipment of shrapnel coming in.
Odo's going about this all wrong. Guilt isn't established by the recipient's address. It's by the sender.
Hmm.
Come on.
Spoken like somebody who does a lot of shopping on the dark web.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail.
A fucking pail.
Mr. Bucket, I have to revert back to my limits.
All right. Well, we're on to issue two in the series, and not in a McLaughlin group kind of way. We pick up right where we left off. Quark is defending his innocence up until the moment that Odo is called away by Dr. Bashir. There's another body that's been found on the station, and he's a Bajoran health commissioner called Kaden. So yeah. He was definitely born in the 2000s. He was stabbed lots.
He was stabbed. His friends Aiden, Jaden, and Kaelin all got away, fortunately. Right. The suggestion is made that he kind of died instantly, but it sounds a lot like one of those jail yard shankings where he's just punched full of holes. And the next person that they go talk to is plain simple Garrick in the tailor shop. They start talking to him about the fact that he seems to have a connection to both crimes, because Kaden had just picked up some new duds at Garrick's right before getting murdered.
Garrick is suspicious in this scene because he keeps asking about the condition of the garments. Like, he wasn't stabbed while wearing them, was he? Do you think there's resale value in the garment if it was just hung up in his closet and not worn during the murder?
Did any blood get in the shopping bag? Because that's kind of the first thing my mind goes to.
Right. Doesn't look good for Garrick. Kind of competing feelings about Garrick as both being the shield for Bashir and also the last guy that Kaden saw before he died.
He has some, like, straight out of a film noir lines here when he says, "This station has more tales to tell than even you know, and even a longer memory." Right. Cardassian Fatal. More progress is being made on what type of explosion it was. O'Brien casts a little doubt on Garrick being a reasonable suspect, just given the fact that he was nearly killed in the first explosion. And Kira comes up to Odo and says, like, "Hey, there's a Vedic teller, and he wants to speak to you." And he's like, "I don't want to speak to a Vedic right now." And she's like, no, I said Vedic teller. Do you realize how rare it is for teller to be the one that's doing the talking? "He's just going to bend my ear about his idiotic libertarian politics. I understand that he's a very talented illusionist and performer, but the fucking politics are a fucking snooze."
"I feel like it's a very enjoyable show if you just set that off to the side and allow yourself to enjoy their skill at magic."
"Unfortunately, they just find ways to work it in. At all times, they are true believers. I mean, Vedic Teller is on the board of Reason Magazine. What the hell?"
"But at the same time, some of their tricks are really amazing as illusions. Makes you wonder how they even do that stuff."
"I mean, I can do some pretty neat tricks myself, but that guy could catch a bullet in his teeth. How does he do it? I don't know."
Were you clear on when in Deep Space Nine's timeline this comic was happening in relation to Odo and Kira's relationship? Because
I couldn't remember.
I couldn't either. And it seems like if they are in the middle of their romance, they're keeping it strictly professional in this scene.
Yeah.
To the extent where I was like, Kira, the guy's fucking busy right now, like a little too busy to deal with Vedic shit at the moment. Like, maybe later.
Yeah, slow your roll a bit.
Worf and Odo's investigation continues in Caden's apartment, and the bickering continues up until the moment that a full-on, like, montage of crime fighting happens. Yeah. Like, scene after scene of, like, busts on the station featuring them. And this is, like, this would have made up for a fun sidecar series to the show.
Yeah.
Like, Worf and Odo fighting crime.
Clean up the streets of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, just like low-level misdemeanor shit.
Yeah. And it ends with them pinning a lot of the crime on the station to those Nausicaans. One of them pulls out a giant knife and tries to stab Odo, and that's a pretty funny way to go out. Get your wrist caught in the gold.
Yeah, I mean, anytime a Nausicaan brandishes a knife, it makes me want to just like cover the middle of my chest and the middle of my back.
Yeah, this would have been a very triggering scene for Picard to read, because it's like Odo gets stabbed in like exactly the same spot, but walks away from it.
Yeah, no shit.
No mechanical heart for Odo.
Pretty great moment.
They've cleaned up the streets. They've solved a lot of the petty crime on the station, but it hasn't gotten them any closer to who blew up the coffee shop and who killed Caden. So Odo takes a little break and does Kira this favor and goes and meets with Vedic Teller.
And his secretary that looks exactly like Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah. And the secretary, like, he does not like take leave once he's brought Odo into the Vedic's office, right? He like,
I thought that was weird too. What an assumption.
He does a lot of the talking himself. Like he's the one that says, the Vedic wants to tell Odo about how Caden actually was a collaborator during the Cardassian occupation, but it's the assistant guy that actually drops that bomb.
I was surprised by that too. This guy either doesn't know his place or really knows his place in Bajoran workplace society. Maybe that's just how it goes for them.
Like, I don't think that the Vedic ever makes an accusation that he would then have to defend later. His assistant kind of does all of the finger pointing in the conversation, and the Vedic is just like, I've brought you here to tell you something important and salacious.
Right.
You know?
And what he tells him is that Caden was a collaborator and a dirtbag that is hated by all Bajorans. Surprised Kira didn't tell you this.
Yeah.
Because even Kira knows later on.
She does. But we're too busy with Kira right now to unpack that, because she is paying a visit to a Ferengi trade delegation who are partying in a wardroom somewhere. And they're like not answering the doorbell because they're drinking too hard. And she finally like has to like get somebody to override the security lockouts to let her in. And when she comes in, they all start foaming at the mouth and keel over and die.
Not enough is made about the trauma of what this must have been like for Kira. Like, she is up close and in these people's faces, and eight of them just die of poison right in front of her.
And all like instantaneously at the same time. Like, there isn't one of them that like looks at his drink and pours it out, you know?
There's the guilt that someone feels, you know, witnessing a terrible event, that like part of what magnifies that kind of guilt is whether or not it's incidental, like whether or not it's causation or correlation. And the timing is what's got to make Kira feel even worse. Like, low key, she's got to feel like on some level she might have triggered this.
Yeah. Maybe there was something to do with overriding the lockout or something. Right.
Maybe it was like a jigsaw situation. Like, maybe they didn't hear her because they would have told her that by opening the door, it would have triggered the poison that ended up killing them.
What are you doing now?
Exactly. So Bashir comes in and is able to take a bladder sample, and he tells Kira, definitely a nerve toxin. And so this is another thing that like shouldn't have been able to be brought aboard the station, that there's something really fucked up going on. Like, somebody is getting all kinds of contraband on board the station. I guess this kind of goes to exonerate Quark, though, right? Because Quark has been in prison this whole time and probably wouldn't be the dude that the mercs eight members of the Ferengi trade delegation.
Has he been in prison the whole time? They don't really cut back to him.
I had the impression that he was in in the detention facility when they left him. It's a fucking perfect alibi.
Yeah, that's the kind of alibi you want.
Yeah.
That's one of the great times to be in prison.
Totally. So this is all happening concurrently with a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
Between a bunch of Federation muckety mucks who are talking about how bad the war is going, how they need to resupply the Fifth Fleet, or it'll be, you know, it'll be destroyed by the Dominion, and they need like hundreds and hundreds of quantum torpedoes in order to do that, but they just don't have them.
They're running out of torpedoes, and they have far fewer than is generally known.
Yeah. And Dax comes in the room and, like, you know, gives the captain the little head nod, like, hey, can I speak to you privately? Because, like, the last thing that happens before Dax comes in is like, well, it's a good thing the Ferengi are here, because they will sure sell us the shit out of some torpedoes. And now they get the bad news that the Ferengis, they dead.
I think it's weird that the Federation and its war allies would buy arms from the Ferengi no matter how desperate. Like, where is the military industrial complex at work that pumps these things out?
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like an entity as vast and as wealthy, quote unquote, you know, and I mean wealth in a number of ways, as the Federation would have a hard time with the manufacture and distribution of quantum torpedoes, you know, especially at the hundreds, which is what they're talking about. I would expect that they would have a big problem making 5,000 of them.
Right.
But a couple hundred seems doable, especially because we know the station itself has hundreds of torpedoes in its banks, right?
Maybe they're manufactured by the chaotic bros. Hmm? And their planet, we hear about the Benzite president in exile because the chaotic bro planet got taken over by the Dominion at one point.
And we know that the Benzites are blue, maybe that, and we know that the quantum torpedo is blue specifically.
Right. So there
and
you go.
They put their little stamp on that. And plus, when you fire a quantum torpedo, it's got the little mustache heater on the front.
Speaking of planets that have been occupied by the Dominion, they get word from Federation High Command that this crime wave is something that needs to get solved. And so the Federation is going to, quote, throw some resources at it. And what that means is that they're sending an investigator to work with Odo on solving the problem. His name is Retlaw. He's from Federation Security, which is described as being a civilian police and investigative force separate from Starfleet.
He really takes over the scene when he arrives. He saunters into frame with Betazoid Brian Dennehy gravitas, and then he proceeds to do Beta Z party tricks on everyone there as an icebreaker.
Yeah.
I love this.
Yeah. The outstretched hands of Odo, I don't know what the fuck is going on with you. You're a blank to me. Is the throw to like the chagrined look on Odo's face is the last frame in book two of this 4-book series.
I'm just a big fan of magic in general, and this guy has none of the unsavory real life qualities that many of my favorite musicians have.
Hey, look, in the back of this book here, there are a bunch of covers for issues that were done by our buddy J.K. Woodward.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, this is great. We've got a lot of talented friends.
We sure do. We're some lucky podcasters, you and me.
We're the least talented friends in this friend group.
Yeah. Well, that's the end of books one and two. And our next episode of Greatest Discovery will be finishing up with the Murder on the Edge, Too Long a Sacrifice. So I guess I don't need to ask you if you liked these issues, do I? Or I guess I do. I mean, we would ask that if the...
Of course.
In a two-part episode arc, I guess we would ask that question.
It's a hard question to answer for a couple of reasons. One, because we have not finished the story. But two, like, I'm predisposed to liking the new thing.
Yeah.
And I like reading comics again with you. So I enjoyed the experience very much.
I did too. I think that there's like a couple of things that like I don't love about this. Like there's one moment in the crime fighting montage where they show up at like an illegal card game and Odo has a gun, and that feels like a pretty big mistake to me. Like Odo's whole right. thing is he never has a gun, and I'm the kind of fan that has a hard time turning off the thing in his head that's going like, if this is a story that happened during the Dominion War, why didn't we see television about it? Why was no reference made to the crime wave or the terrorist acts that gripped the station right. for a period? And I know that that's like, you know, like that kind of like ruins the fun of this to some extent. And I try to fight that impulse in my head, but it does, you know, pop into my mind as I read this book. But overall, I did really like it. And I love the Star Trek as a placeness. It feels really like the tone of it is so fun. And
yeah,
I like an Odo-centric arc. So I'm really excited to read books 3 and 4.
Yeah, really well done.
And gotta say, the color in this book is one of my favorite parts. Like, I know that I'm biased here because our buddy Felipe did the color and sent these books to us. But as I like the look and feel of these scenes is so good, and there's some really clever color choices that I think really show like what a close eye he has when he watches Deep Space Nine, like. The way they gelled the lights and the way,
right.
you know, foreground and back, you know, often there are like really bright lights in the backgrounds of scenes and the foreground is like more subdued on Deep Space Nine. And all of that stuff is so beautifully captured in the way these pages are colored. So,
yeah, if you're going for that film noir vibe, this book really does it.
Totally.
In spades. I feel like IDW has always done a great job with those qualities, like the look and feel aspects of a comic, I think they really have down. I wonder if we're getting a higher quality paper page on the graphic novel than we would on the comic book. I'm trying to remember, like, all the IDW stuff has been really good in that way, but
yeah,
like this paper is a little thicker and a little glossier than I'm used to in an off the rack comic.
Totally.
The quality may or may not be a little bit better because it's a packaged graphic novel
yeah.
than the per issue comic, but we've been pretty happy with the issue by issue comics we've gotten up to now. So
yeah,
good stuff.
Well, you want to see if we have any priority one messages in the Greatest Discovery inbox?
I'm going to head over there and feel the thickness of the paper on those.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Ben, we've got a priority one message here from Ryan from Sacktown.
Hey.
And it is to Ben and Adam. Message goes like this. Howdy, guys. Just enjoying the podcast as winter ends and summer starts. Doing a rewatch of GG right now, so I thought I'd send you some podcast fluid money. Quick question. Either of you have a favorite whiskey to recommend? This is hole number 2 in the priority one punch card. I guess 2 equals Klingon, question mark.
I mean, Klingons punch 2 holes with each P1, right?
Yeah, well put, Ryan from Sacktown.
It's called redundancy.
I see what you're doing there.
Man, I am just not enough of a whiskey drinker to confidently recommend one. I guess I'm gonna bow out of this because I just don't feel like I drink enough whiskey to play a favorite.
I've got a rec here that may or may not be available in Sacktown. I imagine it probably would be. When my wife and I went to Nashville a couple of years ago, we toured a distillery by the name of Nelson's Greenbrier.
Wow.
And the tour was really cool. It's a distillery with a lot of history. And fortunately, it is a place that makes a really delicious whiskey and bourbon.
Wow.
I've been able to find bottles of it in LA. So maybe Ryan in Sacktown will be able to find them up where they are. But that'd be my rec.
Yeah. I mean, chances are pretty good that the distribution is statewide, right?
It is not an especially cost prohibitive bottle either, I would say. Like, this isn't at a price point that makes it only a special occasion whiskey or bourbon. This is like a... This is a decent price for an extremely high quality whiskey that you can enjoy.
Yeah.
That you can enjoy night in and night out.
Yeah. Well, I guess if I had a whiskey to recommend, it would be tequila.
That is my favorite whiskey.
Well, if you'd like to supplement our podcast fluid budget, head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a promotional message. And we got a lot of availability over here on The Greatest Discovery. So place your bets.
Yeah, ask us a question. We'll really luxuriate in the priority one message time if you slide something in there that's interesting. So do it.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... Oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you discover yourself an Edward Larkin?
Edward Larkin! This is a bit selfish, but I'm actually going to give it to myself for this issue because I did something very dumb in reading this comic book. I turned a page and I didn't realize I turned two pages and I was like really confused for a while. I read the first page where Bashir like shows up on the promenade, bumps into Garrick. They say like, "Are you hungry?" And then turned to Garrick, like noticing an explosion happening. And I was like, "What the hell? This just opens with a totally unset up explosion. We're just blindsided by it." And then I get to the next page and they're like talking about how they were eating in a restaurant. I was like, "God, this, I don't know if I like this comic." Like, I feel like we needed like at least a scene in the restaurant to like establish what that was, why they were doing it. Were they close to the explosion, far away? I got pretty far into the book where I was like, I'm going to go back and see if I missed something. And I like felt the pages kind of like crack a little bit and break apart. And it was just, they were just a little like, I guess like the ink had kind of fused at the edges of the pages or something.
Well, why are your pages stuck together, Ben? Really, is my question.
I don't know. I mean, these were sent from Amazon, so maybe somebody at Amazon jacked off to the scene of Garrick and Bashir having lunch together, which I wouldn't blame anyone for doing that.
That's not what I'm reading their employees are putting into bottles.
But I felt like a real dope and I like basically had to like start the comic over because it was like so annoying to me reading it through the first time that it had just started this way that I basically had to start back from one and read through it again and then like, oh yeah, that like these scenes do make sense in the order that they are told. So I am my own Edward Larkin for this episode of The Greatest Discovery. How about you?
I gotta say it's Worf for me, just because I couldn't, what is he doing? What is he doing inserting himself into this investigation? What is he doing getting into fights with Nausicaans?
Yeah.
Is he just spoiling for a fight because he's bored? I don't know. He just kind of bursts onto the scene.
Yeah.
In a way that that in retrospect feels very Worf-like.
His temper really boils over early and often in this. Like,
if Worf had this kind of temper on the show, he would not be fit for duty.
Yeah. He's really short-tempered.
Like Odo kind of warns the Nausicaans, like, no vigilante justice allowed, Nausicaans.
Yeah.
but it's Worf who's like especially into that in his own right, I think.
Yeah. Odo should club Worf with a big big hand.
Yeah, Worf should talk to Odo's hand.
So next time on Greatest Discovery, we are going to pick up this comic where we left off. Our thanks to Felipe for sending it to us. I imagine you can buy this at your local comic shop or find it on Comixology if you're looking to read along with us. Yeah, that's next week, and I suppose we'll leave it with Robs from here.
Thanks, Robs.
The Greatest Discovery is a Maximum Fun podcast. It's hosted by Adam Pranica and Ben Harrison and produced by me, Rob Schulte. Our theme music is by Adam Ragusea. Check out his YouTube page and you can find your next recipe. Find out more about Felipe's comics by heading to FelipeSobriero.com. That link is in the show notes. Hey, if you're looking to discover more Trek, go follow all of our social programs or our Twitch channel under the handles Greatest Trek. The Twitter account and the Instagram are run by the great Bill Tilly. Thank you, Bill. Keep making those fun cards. If you'd like to support the podcast, make sure you head to MaximumFun.org/join and tick the boxes for the Greatest Discovery and the Greatest Generation when you sign up. There's lots of fun bonus content. You can also leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, which costs absolutely nothing. Want to find other friends of DeSoto to chat with? There's Facebook groups, there's a subreddit, and there's a Discord at DrunkShermoda.com. Thanks so much. We'll see you next week with another episode of The Greatest Discovery.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.